I'll entice you with a picture. This is Lucia Joy, and this is Josh and Megan's little girl, Lucia Joy, or I've heard them say Lucy. So she is fantastic. I think around 19 inches and 6 pounds and, you know, some change. So they're doing great. Plan to go home today. You know, what we usually do for folks who have had a baby or some other significant moment in their life, both joyful or maybe sorrowful, we will often provide food to those folks, because if you don't have to worry about making a meal, it can be a really big gift. It's simple, but it's also really helpful. So we have a meal train that you can go on to Facebook and find the Branch Meal Train. We'll be making food for them. And we're also, you know, as Hannah said, we're glad to see that Nate is here today. Hey, buddy. He was finally able to get into a car and not throw up. And so that's a win. You know, that's a win, hopefully. Chat with him. Make sure you say hi. And it's a beautiful thing to have him with us. All right, so we're going to continue this series today called Love Does. And we have over 50 people in a small group that are meeting for 5 weeks, the 5 weeks of this series. If you're not in a group and you'd like to be, grab me today and we'll do our best to see if we can fit you in somewhere. We've got a lot of folks in groups and we love that. It's a great way to get connected, and it's a great way to take what we're talking about here and process it with others. So that's happening over the next 5 weeks as well. You know, this series is a call to action. It is God inviting us to not just talk about love, but to do it. And as we said last week when we started this series, really one of the biggest deterrents to action is fear. We started to think about the ways in which fear gets a hold of us, paralyzes us, causes us to hesitate. We're going to talk more about that today, fear's role. But this guy didn't know anything about fear. Mr. Heston here, right, portraying Moses in that film, gosh, made in the 50s, I think, maybe 60s, called The Ten Commandments. This is him getting ready to part the Red Sea. You know this story, right? This story, you know, that this movie is based on. The people of Israel are in slavery, right? A stubborn Pharaoh oppresses them. God hears the cries of his people and sends Moses, who enters the story as a baby, secretly placed in a riverbed and found by the daughter of Pharaoh, adopted into that family. Moses grows up in the house of Pharaoh until one day he sees a Hebrew being treated unfairly, and he kills an Egyptian who's carrying out this oppression. And because of that murder, Moses is a murderer, he has to flee. He flees into the desert, where for 40 years he tends sheep, marries, has a family. And then one day, while out tending sheep, he finds a bush that's burning but not. And he approaches it, and God speaks to him, gives him a mission. You'll free my people. And Moses protests. No, I won't. Not it. God says, no, you're going to do it. No, not going to do it, Moses says. He protests over and over again. Finally, though, he goes. Pharaoh then protests and protests and protests at the letting go of God's people. But finally, he gives way. And the people are free, sort of. They get pinned, you know, between a rock and a hard place, and the waters part. God makes a way. It's about as epic of a story as it gets. It's really not a surprise that that Hollywood thought it was worthy of a movie. You know, it fit the bill. It's got all the stuff that you want in an epic film. And the central player, Moses, has quite a story. He ends up becoming, Moses does, one of the most revered people really in history. Say Moses, and people know who you're talking about. Yet his story started the same way that ours often does. His adventure began like ours do, with hesitation and protest. If love does, Moses didn't. Not at first. He tried every excuse. He bent to every fear. And you can't blame the guy. Maybe that's the point, actually. As we'll see, Moses' story is a lot like our own. So let's give it a read.
Yeah?
Exodus 3 is where we're going to be today. You are welcome, of course, to grab a Bible. You can pull out your phone if you do that. Just so you're aware, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. So if you're on your phone or a tablet, you can easily do that. The Bibles in front of you are the NIV. We'll read a little differently, but you'll still get the gist. Or you can listen, which works too. So Exodus 3, Moses has grown up in Pharaoh's home. He's committed murder. He's fled into the desert, started a new life. And one day, in verse 1 of chapter 3, Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led the flock far into the wilderness and came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement. Though the bush was engulfed in flames, it didn't burn up. "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," Moses replied. "Do not come any closer," the Lord warned. "Take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord told him, "I've certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I've heard their cries of distress because of their harsh slave drivers. Yes, I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the land where the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites now live. Look, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me, and I have seen how harshly the Egyptians abused them. Now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people Israel out of Egypt." But Moses protested to God. We'll pause there for a moment. Moses protested. Hard to fault the guy when you think about it, right? To say that God had given him a mission that required courage would be a silly understatement. The last time Moses was in Egypt, Pharaoh was trying to kill him. Kill him. And God says, "This is where I'm sending you, back to that very place and to that same throne room. That is your mission. Oh, and by the way, when you get there, you're also going to make the most audacious and ridiculous request possible to the Pharaoh." I've tried to put myself in Moses' shoes and imagine how I would have reacted and felt. What do you think you would have done if God had given you this mission? There are times when God calls me to something relatively simple, like extending hospitality to a stranger, just maybe saying hi to someone. And my introverted self hesitates. I sense my fears rising up. I protest. What is something God has called you to do? Maybe something as seemingly ordinary as offering an apology to someone you've wronged. Or maybe as complex as moving across the country. What is something God has called you to do? How did you feel about that? What was your initial gut reaction to that call, that invitation? I know that if I had been Moses, I know I would have protested too. I know I would have. I'd like to think better of myself, but I know I would have found a way out if there was a way. And in fact, all four, Moses protests four times. We'll read them here in a moment. All four of them are quite personally known to me. They feel very familiar. Maybe they will to you as well. So let's look at them together. And again, I want to invite you as we go through these. We're going to walk through chapter 3 and then part of chapter 4. I want you to listen for these protests that Moses makes and see if any of them feel familiar to you. Back to verse 11. Moses protested to God, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt?" Moses' first protest sounds, again, familiar, at least to me. Who am I? Who am I, God? I think this protest has been shared by men and women for probably thousands and thousands of years, maybe even by some of us. Who am I, God? You don't mean me. You don't want me to go there to do that, do you? Not me, you know. This is one of my go-tos when I sense the Spirit calling me to do something. Oh, God, who am I? Come on. I mean, you must have the wrong Chris. There's Chris Petter, Chris Miller, Chris Frank. I mean, just in this church alone, it must be the wrong Chris. So why don't you go talk to one of them? They'll fill in, you know. And I'd like to think that it's humility that causes me to say this. God, I'm so humble. Who am I to go where you are sending me? But the reality is that it's not humility. Not most of the time. It's fear. It's fear. Or shame. Or doubt. But notice God's response. God answered, "I will be with you." When God comes to you with a mission, whether it's creating a date night for your spouse or confronting someone at work whose behavior is destructive or moving to Africa, you know, anything in between those, when God comes to you, do you ever say, "Who am I? Not me, God. Pick somebody else, just not me." You ever said that? When we protest in these ways, I think God speaks the same words to us. I will be with you. And when one of my children have a mission, I use that word loosely here for a moment. When one of my children have a mission that feels overwhelming, too scary, too big, like heading into a dark basement, or completing an impossible homework assignment, you know, we will often say to them, "Oh, don't worry, I'll be with you. I'll go with you down into that basement. I'll sit here at the table. You know, don't worry, I'll be with you." And those simple words communicate a couple of things, at least. One is that I love you. I love you enough to be with you. And the other, I think that it communicates, is that I believe you can do it. I'll go with you. We can go. You can make it down into that basement. You can get this homework assignment done. I'm with you because I think you can do it. And I can't help but wonder if when God says this to us, if God isn't thinking something similar. I'm with you because I love you. And I'm with you because I think you can do this. Together with me, this is possible. I will be with you. Let's read on. Verse 13, but Moses protested. This is the second one. We're not rereading. This is just him now firing up for a second time. "Oh, okay, fine, you'll be with me. But if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, they will ask me, 'What is his name?' Well, then what should I tell them?" Now, the scriptures don't tell us a whole lot about Moses' first 60 years or so, give or take. But from what we do know, it seems that Moses would have had little to no experience or knowledge of the God of Israel. At least, not to say he wouldn't have heard of Yahweh, not to say that he wouldn't have known about the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. But Moses grew up in Pharaoh's home and then went off and lived in a desert with a guy who wasn't a Hebrew, as far as we can tell. And so he wants to know, okay, who are you? What do I tell the people of Israel? What do I tell myself? I mean, you're sending me back into the heart of the beast on a crazy mission. So who are you? And God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me to you. So Moses wants clarity, and God doesn't really give it. I mean, it's helpful, but these words actually here are the most, I would say, the most written about and maybe the most debated words in the scriptures. Or it would have, like, be top 10 for sure. Because these words in Hebrew are really hard to translate and to get our head our head around. And so scholars have just parsed and written and tried to, what exactly does this mean, I am who I am? You know. Another translation could easily be, I will be who I will be. Try using that sometime. You know, I will be who I will be. It's mysterious, as Hannah was talking about earlier. God is known and yet unknown, and maybe that's part of the point of God giving this name for God's self. Scholars who study Hebrew for a living say that, you know, these verbs here, I am who I am, they connect the name of God to being itself. In other words, God is being and the basis of all being. God is the source of all existence, of all things. And what's more, God is beyond all things that have been created and exist and are known and be. Yeah. So what does this mean for you and for me, for Moses? Well, maybe one thing it means is that the God who calls us into mission is both the source of everything we know, and he is beyond everything we know. This is the God who is with us. I am who I am. God is not a grandfatherly-looking giant version of us who sits up in the clouds and grants wishes from time to time. God is boundless, timeless, limitless. God is completely other, above all and over all, and yet with us. I am who I am. Still, Moses isn't sure. Chapter 4, Moses protested again. But what if they don't, what if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say that the Lord never appeared to you? How familiar are you with this form of protest? What if? God gives you a mission to have a few neighbors over for a barbecue or to begin tutoring at a local school. And as soon as God's invitation comes, so do our questions. Well, God, what if the neighbors say no? Or what if they say yes and everyone comes over and no one talks to each other? Or what if the food's an absolute disaster? Or what if? Or what if the kid I tutor doesn't like me? What if they have questions I can't answer or problems at home that I can't solve? Or what if? What if, like all of the protests that we're looking at today, again, is usually rooted in fear. Fear about the things that we can't control. That's what this question really gets at. We ask it because we're scared that the things outside of our control are going to go sideways. Well, what if, God? And I think we need to be honest this morning. It certainly was true for Moses. I think it's true for us as well, that when God calls us into mission, there will always be all sorts of things outside of our control. Which means that there will be plenty of opportunities for fear to whisper to us. Look at what God tells Moses to do in reply to his protest and his fear. It's in verse 2 of chapter 4. Then the Lord asked him, What is that in your hand? A shepherd's staff, Moses replied. throw it down on the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw down the staff, and it turned into a snake. Moses jumped back. Then the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. So Moses reached out and grabbed it, and it turned back into a shepherd's staff in his hand. Perform this sign, the Lord told him. Then they will believe that the Lord, the God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, really has appeared to you. Moses protests, what if, God, what if? And God's response is to demonstrate God's power. The staff and the snake are God's way of saying, don't worry about the things outside of your control. I am with you. I am who I am, and my power is available to you. Now, I often find myself wishing that shepherd's staffs turned into snakes when I needed a little bit of extra, encouragement. Or maybe better yet, cardboard boxes into soft-serve ice cream machines. Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah, that'd be cool if God was like, hey, power. And I was like, yes, power. I now know you're real. Maybe this happens for Moses and doesn't happen for us because of the size of Moses' mission. I'm not so sure why shepherd's staffs don't turn into snakes anymore, at least not in our experience a whole lot here in North America. Maybe it's partly because of the kind of mission that Moses has and who he is going to, and maybe God's power is going to need to be dramatic given the circumstances. But just because staffs don't turn into snakes or cardboard boxes into soft-serve ice cream machines doesn't mean that God's power isn't present in our lives. Think back on your life for a moment. God's faithful power is there to be seen. You may not think about it often, but in the everyday things like your lungs expanding and your heart beating, these are reminders of God's power. Or when warring friends reconcile, or neighbors pitch in to fix a widow's home, or a community comes together to raise the reading scores of an elementary school, God's power is there. And just like it was for Moses, our what ifs, and we usually have plenty of them, they are quieted when we remember God's power in our lives. When we look back and remember the ways that God has been with us, it gives us confidence that God will be with us. I am with you. I am who I am, and my power is available to you. Still, though, Moses isn't so sure. By the way, it's not just the snake and the staff. God also has him put his hand into his cloak, take it back out. It's like has a skin disease on it. Then God has him put it back in and take it back out, and it's healed, right? So, I mean, God's showing all kinds of things, but Moses still isn't convinced. I like Moses. You know what I mean? Right? He needs more. So in verse 10 of chapter 4, but Moses pleaded. It's not protesting anymore. Now he's just pleading with the Lord. Oh, Lord, I'm not very good with words. I've never been, and I'm not now, even though you have spoken to me. I get tongue-tied and my words get tangled. You're giving me this job of going to the Pharaoh and proclaiming, this demand and speaking to, I can't do this. I'm not very good with fill in the blank. God, I'm not very good with apologies. I'm not very good at leading other people. I'm not very good at teaching my kids how to. I'm not very good at following through. I'm not very good at taking risks. I mean, what would be the thing that you would put in the blank? Moses does something that we probably all have done. We believe the lie that the weak, broken parts of ourselves disqualify us from being used by God. We believe the lie that our weak and broken parts of ourselves disqualify us from being used by God. But look at God's reply to Moses. Then the Lord asked Moses, "Who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or do not speak, hear or do not hear, see or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you in what to say. I will be with you as you," again, fill in the blank. Go ahead and put up your best protest. Identify your greatest weakness. And God's response to you is that I will be with you in that weakness. I've made you. I know you. I am who I am. So maybe there's a couple of steps for us to take this morning. And maybe the first one is to do what Moses does. Again, I like him a lot. He voices his fear. Sometimes I think we don't do that. We maybe aren't even aware of the fear that is governing our decisions. And sometimes when we are, we don't say a thing about it. Maybe the first thing to do is to protest. To be honest enough with ourselves and with God to say, I am not going to do this. Or I have a major problem. Or I'm really struggling to believe that. And to be honest with God about whatever that fear might be. And then, in our honesty, listen for God's reply. This is what God says to Moses. I will be with you. I am who I am. My power is with you. I will be with you as you. Which of those promises do you need to grab a hold of? And it may be for the neighborhood barbecue that you're planning. You're just not sure if you should do it or it's going to work or what if that happens. Maybe it's a relationship that needs some work and you're not quite able to take a step because of fear, even though that's God's mission to you. What promise do you need to claim and live into this morning? I want to give us just a moment to reflect on that in some quiet and prayer, and then we'll move into communion together. Let's pray. God, would your words echo in our hearts and minds? Would these promises ring true? And may we grab a hold of them. May you give us new faith to believe that they are true. And in doing so, may we be able to love, to put our love into action, however you may be calling us to do that. God, would we listen to you in these next few moments? Would we even hear your promises to us in this time of quiet? Give us ears to hear, God. God, we thank you for being with us, even when we're scared, even when we have doubts, even when we try and run away. You remain with us. Thank you for being constant in our lives. Help us to turn towards you and follow you. Amen.